All right. Good morning, everyone. So we read this week the Seder Vayechi and finish the Sefer Bereishis. It's a parsha filled with brachos. At the core of the parsha are Yaakov's brachos for his sons, really his final charge to his sons, how he defines their personalities and what he expects of them in the future. But before, Yaakov blesses Ephraim and Menashe, Yosef's sons. It's at the moment when Yosef is designated as the Bechor, as the firstborn, so he is entitled to Pishnayim, a double portion. That double portion means Ephraim u'Menashe k'Ruvein v'Shimon yuli, that Ephraim and Menashe will be the same to Yaakov as Ruvein and Shimon. It is to say, Yosef's tribe is divided into two. So of the 12 tribes, two are B'nai Yosef. Levi is considered separate because he had a separate designation. When the land of Israel is to be divided, it will be divided amongst 12 tribes, not including Levi. Among the 12 tribes are the two sons of Yosef, Ephraim and Menashe. So what's the blessing? Well, it's one that we're all familiar with. It's in Perek Memches, Pasuk Tes Zayin. Yaakov says, HaMaloch HaGoel Asi Mikol Ra, the angel that redeems me from all evil, Yivarech Es HaNe'arim V'Karei V'Hem Shmi, he should bless these lads and call them by my name, B'Shem Avosai, Avraham V'Yitzchok, and the name of my fathers, Avraham and Yitzchok, V'yidgul arov v'kerev ha'aretz, and they should multiply, warning, they should multiply abundantly like fish in the midst of the land. All right. So that's a very famous phrase, v'yidgul arov v'kerev ha'aretz. What does it mean? What does it mean to multiply like fish? And why fish? And once we're talking fish, why fish v'kerev ha'aretz in the midst of the land? The fish are not in the land. The fish are bayam. The fish are in the sea. So what does it mean entirely? Right. The notion of who this Maloch is, who's redeeming Yaakov, that will leave for another time. Rashi says here, v'yidgul arov, they should multiply abundantly, kadagim halolu, like these fish, sheparim v'ravim, that are fruitful and multiply, ve'ein ayin hara shaletes bahem, and the evil eye has no dominion over them. No sway of the evil eye over the descendants of Yosef. Now, Rashi, of course, is quoting famous Gemara in Brachos, Daf Chof Amad Aleph, that I now take the liberty of reading. The Gemara says, Rabbi Yochan hava rogil da hava ka'ozil the Yosef b'shari tzvila. Rabbi Yochanan would regularly sit at the entrance to the mikvah. Omar, he said, ki solkon ve'asyon benos Yisrael mitvila, when the Jewish women would ascend from the mikvah after using it, listaklon vi, they should look at me, that they should have handsome children like me. That was his regular practice. Everyone needs a hobby. That was Rabbi Yochanan's.
He didn't think much of himself.
What's that?
He didn't think much of himself.
On the contrary.
That's what I mean.
But like Muhammad Ali used to say, if you can do it, it ain't bragging. So he had what to offer. Chazal say elsewhere is talking they should be great in Torah. But in fact, the Gemara does say in Bamitzia that Rabbi Yochanan was very handsome, and he would wish that upon the women. All right, it seems a tad unusual. Omri le Rabbanon. So the Chachamim said to Rabbi Yochanan, Lo kamistafei mar me'ein abisha, aren't you afraid of an ayin hara, that you're sitting outside the mikvah? Omar lehu, he said to them, Ana, and this is where we come in, Ano mizar de Yosef Karsina, I am a descendant of Yosef, de lo sholta be eino bisha, that the ayin hara does not have any dominion over the descendants of Yosef. So he's not afraid of how it looks, what people will say, etc. Now ayin hara, of course, is a big industry today. the evil eye industry. For the most part, it makes Jews look like fools and primitives, to put it in a nice way. Don't do this, whatever it is, so the Ayin Hara, the evil eye, won't affect you. Or wear this so as to prevent the Ayin Hara from affecting you. It's not exactly a shining moment for the Amchocha Menavon, Hagoy HaGodol Hazeh, for a wise and understanding people. It just makes us look as primitive as any other religion in the world. But there's obviously some deep thought behind it, which we'll explore today. So what is it? Rabbi Yochanan is saying that he is not afraid of the Ayin Hara because he's Ben Yosef. How do we know Yosef was not subject to the Ayin Hara? So that's in the Brachos of Yaakov. The Gemara continues, Dichsiv, Ben Parat Yosef, Ben Parat Ale Oyin. Yosef is Ben Parat, he's a charming son, Ale Oyin. Ale Oyin means like Al Ha'ayin, over the eye. Om Rabbi Abohu Al Tikre Ale Oyin, Ela Ole Oyin, mean he's above the eyes. That's the remez, that's the illusion that Yosef HaTzadik was not subject to the evil eye, and therefore, nor are his descendants. Rashi says, Alei olei oyed misulakin min ha'ayin, she'eno sholetes bahem. They removed from the eye, that it has no dominion over them at all. Okay, that's what Gemara says. Reb Yossi Bar Chanina Omar Mehocha, Reb Yossi Bar Chanina said, we learn it from this pasuk that we just discussed. The Yidgu Larov Bekerev Ha'aretz, they'll multiply like fish in the middle of the earth. Just like the fish in the sea, the water covers them. And the eye has no dominion over them at all. So too, the descendants of Yosef, Ayin Hara has no dominion over them at all, does not rule them. That's one pshat. The Gemara says a second pshat, Alei Oyin, what does it mean to be over the eye? The Gemara says, Ayin shelo rotzta lizo mimasha eno shelo, the eye that did not want to benefit from that which was not, did not belong to it. Meaning what? Rashi says, shelo rotzta lizon velehanos me'eshes adonov, it did not want to have benefit from something that was not its own property. That is to say, Potiphar's wife. Yosef shied away, refused to commit an indecent act with Eishes Potiphar. Ein Ayin Hara Shalatas Bo. Such a person, the Ayin Hara, does not have any dominion over him, nor over his descendants. So Rabbi Yochanan wasn't afraid, because he's descendant of Yosef. All right. So what exactly does this mean? What are we talking about? So years ago I discussed the pshat of Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Kook, which we'll look at this morning, has a pshat which is very profound, similar in some sense to what the Rav said, but very profound in its own right, and I think gives us something to talk about, to think about, how we look at the world, how the world looks at us, how a Jew especially is supposed to manage in a world where there are many hostile and foreign elements that always challenge us. So Rav Kook writes in his parish on Brachos called Ein Aya. It's Daf Chof Amud Beis in Brachos. So he says that Ayin Hara Bifrat, he achas, I have to read it in Hebrew, he achat mekochot shemekablot nefesh achat mizulata al yidei kesher ne'lam shebeinehem. His Ayin Hara is one of the forces that one soul receives from another soul through some hidden, some unknown connection. Meaning there's a hidden force that a person receives from another person that could constitute the Ayin Hara. So we have, he's not talking in a mystical sense at all.
No, vibes.
Exactly. Vibes. Bad vibes. That's what he's talking about. That's such a thing. Think about it for a moment, because we all have that experience, I think Rabbanim more than most. If someone walks in the room, you feel uncomfortable, all right? You ever be in a room and someone walked in that you weren't talking to? It doesn't happen to me, of course, but mm-hmm. you walk into someone you don't talk to, he's in an argument with, or worse might happen. You're currently feuding with. And what do you feel? A sense of discomfort. Often a physiological discomfort. At its worst, people will start to shake or get the hives or start to hyperventilate at its worst. Other times, if the reaction is not that extreme, they'll just feel uncomfortable. They'll feel uneasy. Now, that has a physiological dimension to it as well, but what's happening? There's nothing real, nothing substantive that passed from one person to the other. It's just a feeling that they got, whether it's anger or sadness or just discomfort. But the sight of another person or the realization that another person is present, that gave off, like B said, bad vibes. And those bad vibes make it uncomfortable. It's obviously on an emotional level, on a psychological level, not a physical level. But Rav Kook said, that's a kesher nelam. That's a hidden connection that exists between these two individuals. Why does that happen? He says it's because, mipnei, shenafashot amdot achein liot nefalot mizulaton. The way our souls are made, and the nefesh here means a lower aspect of the soul, but nonetheless, more what we would call the psyche, but even so, nefesh. He said, the way it's made to be influenced by others. Liot nif'alot mizulatan, to be acted upon by someone else. Our psyches are constructed in such a way that we're very attuned to other people, or stimuli. And if someone else, or for that matter, something, causes a trigger, that trigger will give rise, or in the verb form, trigger a certain reaction on our part, usually a psychological reaction. Al kein hinenu roim, therefore we see, the Pasuk says in Mishlei, holech es chachamim yachkam, the person who walks with the wise, he'll become wise. Ve'tzadikim yelech bikvoteyem, and the righteous walk in their footsteps. Or, hamitchaber l'rashoim yekimotam, a person who attaches himself to the wicked, he'll become like the wicked. Something we know very well in our own lives. We can be profoundly influenced by other people. And most people are profoundly influenced by others. What's known pejoratively as the herd mentality, a group of people do something and everyone else wanting. Even a larger number than the people doing it, they're going to follow. Advertising is based on that. In fact, one of Malcolm Gladwell's books, there's a new book now out. I don't know if you heard of him. He's a writer. He wrote Blink. What was the other book? You don't know. I think it was the other one. But it is Blink. He writes about how trends develop. And one of the theories that he has is that trends develop when certain societal trendsetters do something, even if it's a small group. But if it's a small group to whom attention is always paid by the media, then it's as if there's a sudden surge of interest in that object. And he mentioned, for example, different types of shoes that just somehow swept the nation very suddenly, all right? I just noticed that a few months ago, my wife went out to buy Uggs for one of my granddaughters.
And
I said, what are they? I know everybody's wearing them.
Yeah.
That notion of everybody's wearing them, I mean, someone had to start. Or, what's that?
They're ugly, those Uggs.
I mean, they're worn. Whatever, they're boots. They're boots. Well, like, I just noticed...
It was Oprah who started that.
Oh, so you need a societal trendsetter, that's correct. Someone that the herd is going to follow. That's the herd mentality. Or I just noticed, like, everybody walking the street is wearing a North Face jacket. I don't think they did it 4 years ago or 5 years ago, and it's a very warm jacket. But there are other down jackets. Why North Face? It's a symbol. I remember we had to buy my son a jacket in Israel last year, a coat, because it was cold, and they wanted a North Face. which was, I think, like 400, 500 shekels more than, you know, a similar coat. So we bought, I bought him a similar coat. Being a student of Gladwell, I said to him, you be the trendsetter. It's called outdoor wear or something like that. I said, they'll follow you. You be the trendsetter. I can follow them. You save a lot of money that way. But nonetheless, what is that based on? Because the way the human psyche is set up, in the most cases, our nefashos are nifalot mizulaton. We're influenced by what others want to do. Well, it's true in terms of fashion and advertising. It's true in life as well. It's not easy to be the person not speaking Lashon Hara at the gathering where everybody is. Like, it's not easy to be the one who's not talking in shul where everyone is. Conversely, it's not easy to be the person who's talking when you're sitting in a group of people in shul who are not talking. You just feel uncomfortable. So what happens? In the best world, we follow the better angels of our nature. A talker would want to sit in the company of non-talkers to cure himself of his bad habit. Of course, the reverse is usually true. He'll just move to a section where they're more comfortable with that particular vice. It's true in Torah, all right? People sit around and talk Torah. Everyone gets involved. You don't. You go to an environment in a community where Talmud Torah is acceptable. It's wonderful. It's interesting. We have now Motzei Shabbos and Shul, Harim Yoladim, parents and children, renamed from Avot Banim to encompass the mothers and daughters too. Harim Yoladim, over 100 kids came this past Motzei Shabbos under Rabbi Zatz's tutelage. And they got pizza, prizes, the whole thing. But what happens? It becomes a thing to do. It becomes a very exciting activity, something you want to do. So that's the positive impact a community can have. People are doing good things, you want to follow. Sometimes people are doing not so good things, and you're drawn after that as well. So you mentioned fashion, true of sneakers also. The way we dress in the community is influenced by the way others dress, all right? To take an example that we all know, what we allow or allowed our children to do is very often based on what other children are doing. All right. I bet you there's not a person here who hasn't heard yet from a child who was told not to do something, but Jack is doing it, or Jill is doing it, and all my friends are doing it. But that saying is nefashot and nefalot mizulaton. People's souls are influenced by others, and their choices are influenced by others as well. That's the norm. But, Rav Kook said, Amnam. Mi sheitgaber v'sam nafsho chazakol luval tate b'shum ofen me'aderach hanechona, a person who is mitgaber, he has the strength and he is able to set his soul in a strong fashion that it should not veer at all from the right path because of these influences. Even if they'll pour upon him tremendous pressure to follow the herd, he acquires a strength, could also mean brazenness, that it's strong, independently strong, autonomously strong, and it will not be subject to the influences of others. Al-Kain, Ein Ayin Hara Shalatat Ba. That's what we're talking about, the personality, that the Ayin Hara, the evil eye, has no sway over it. Rav Kook said, what's the evil eye? It's the pressure that comes from the outside. The people are looking at what you're doing, and they're expecting you to conform with what everyone else is doing. That's the evil eye to which Yosef was not subject, nor his descendants. That's where Rabbi Yochanan could sit, at the entrance of the mikvah, which is a little bizarre by our standards, and not care what other people were saying, because he meant it lishma, not as a voyeur, it was lishma, because he wanted to that the men and women should have proper attitude when they're going to have children. Think of Torah, think of adding something to God's world, so that people would look at him and say, oh, it's not appropriate, pasnid. They're probably right. But from his perspective, he was acting with Shema. It didn't affect him what others thought. Not to be affected by what others think is a very powerful trait. It makes for a tremendous sense of autonomy.
Few friends,
that's true. Yosef was alone. Yosef Atzadik, right. Why is it? Oh, so the evil eye is only when it's evil. Oh, Zayin Tov. There's an Ayin Tov also. Ayin Tov is trying to draw the people in. Right? You look favorably on it. You speak favorably. It evokes in others favorable attitudes. So that's good. It's only raw when it inclines to raw, when it inclines a person to evil. Now, Rav Kook continues that a person who has that azus, that strength of character, not to be swayed by what others want, what's the majority or the masses or the herd, then he lives that type of independent life. And there are two dimensions to it. One, he says, is that anefesh hamitromemet l'malo me'erech hadvarim, that the soul exists on an exalted level above everything else, because the soul naturally strives for the good, the exalted, the perfected. It doesn't need the influence of others. That's the dimension that the Gemara means here when it speaks about alei oyin, above the eye, or olei oyin, lalot means to ascend. It ascends above the eye, but it's not the eye of others that cause a person to strive for this noble conduct. It's an inner sense that a person has of living the right way. That's ole oyin, al ha'oyin. He's above the eye of others. He's not limited to what others are saying. He is able to reach for the good without even the input of others. That's a very high level. That is an exalted level, nisgav, above what most of us can relate to, but that's one dimension of Yosef, alei oyin. The second is that since all his energies are focused on attaining the good, memela en yachas v'kesha pnimi el nefashot zulato lefol aleh lira'ah. It's not just that he's above the eye, you know, above the influences of others and seeks the good on his own, but he has no inner connection. That kesher nelam that we spoke to, that binds people together, that gives us bad vibes when certain people come into the room, he doesn't have that connection with others because he's removed from the notion and he just sees, oh, this person is here, what does it affect me? He doesn't live in the world of the personal or the world of the relative. He does not have that inner connection. Without that inner connection, no one will be able to drag him down. So there are really two components that we're talking about, and both the Gemara references. One is alei oyin, that he is above the world where others can influence him, and he's also v'yidgu l'orov v'keref ha'aretz, that he is hidden from those who could harm him, hidden like a fish is hidden. What gave Yosef this ability, this capacity, to be ole oyin, to be al ha'ayin? What gave him that capacity? So the Gemara says, one aspect of it was ayin shelo rotzta lizo mima she'ina shelo. He had the eye of one who did not want to benefit from something that was not his. Now, the immediate reference, of course, is to Potiphar's wife. The broader reference is to Yosef's life. Think about his life for a second. It's a life that none of us certainly would envy at all. Yosef was beset, in fact, he was overwhelmed with a variety of external forces in his life. He was banished from his home at the age of 17. And not just from his home. From the home of Yaakov Avinu, for goodness sake. Yaakov's home, a home of complete purity and holiness. Suffice it to say, Yosef had never seen in his life anything but the Kedusha and Tahara of Yaakov's home. And we see that. We discussed it a few weeks ago. He never had to leave. He was the son who ministered to Yaakov, to whom Yaakov taught the Torah of Beis Medrash, Hashem Ve'ever, to whom Yaakov entrusted the ideas about God, and who physically cared for his father. He wasn't with his brother in the fields. So Yosef never got out. All Yosef knew, he sat in coal for years. That's all he knew, was the Beis Medrash never left. And now, at the age of 17, which is still a very impressionable age, Yosef is sent out into the world. And not just the world which was the antithesis of the world in which he was raised, an alien and decadent and hostile world. And yet Yosef was able to conquer his impulses in every situation in which he found himself, with Potiphar himself, right? A person who becomes a slave and then is entrusted with the finances of his wealthy master, that's also a temptation, right? It's very hard to entrust our finances today to anyone. The whole notion of trust has to be reevaluated. Potiphar trusted him. Yosef never abused that trust. It's exactly opposite. Potiphar himself said, whatever I have is his. Whatever's in my bias. It's a nice pasuk. I should read it. He said, I hide nothing from Yosef. Vayar Adonov ki Hashem ito. God, his master, saw that God was with him. V'chol asher oseh Hashem atzliach b'ido. Whatever he does, God makes him successful. Vayimso Yosef chayin ve'ino v'yishores oso. Yosef found favor in the eyes of Potiphar and served him. Vayafkidehu al beiso. He put him over his home. V'chol yeshlo nasan v'yado. Whatever Potiphar had in his house, all his finances, the management of his house, whatever he had, he just entrusted to Yosef, and Yosef had to do nothing, and Potiphar had to do nothing else. That is a very, very high level of accomplishment. To be in a position of having everything taken away, of feeling the harshness, even the brutality of the world, and overcoming that, not being tempted. And then, of course, Potiphar's wife. And she was insisting, we discussed this also years ago, she was invoking Olam Haba, why it's the from thing to do, you know. She had all these reasons she was giving Yosef. No. Vayonos Vayetze Achutza. He left. In prison, he maintained the same spiritual composure that he had. In Mitzrayim, when he was elevated to Paro's palace, the same spiritual composure. Yosef was the same. Yosef had the ability to almost shut out the world of harmful influences and live his life just based on his understanding of right and wrong. And I have to add, a very finely honed sense of right and wrong. Very attuned to the right and wrong of the Torah. But nonetheless, the influence of the world around him. And Yosef really was alone in a way that we can't imagine, really alone, in a world he never knew existed even, and did not know how to accommodate. He withstood every challenge, so that made him Yosef HaTzadik. So Yosef was beyond perceiving himself as others did, and letting his self-worth be measured by others' yardsticks, and in fact, he was beyond as well letting others' opinion of him govern his decision-making in terms of moral choices, in terms of right or wrong. That is a critical trait of a Jew who wants the Eved Hashem, and that epitomized Yosef HaTzadik. That really is the Yid Gula Rov Bekerev Haaretz. Now, Rav Kook takes this up in Ein Ayah, when the Gemara is quoted similarly on Daf Nun Hei Amud Beis in Brachos. And there Rav Kook says that that's Yosef. Who is affected by the Ayin Hara? So there he writes, the Ayin Hara only affects those with Chalishut HaNefesh Amit Ba'elet. They have a weakness of the soul, and that soul, or that aspect of the psyche, is then encroached upon by others. Why is it weak? I quote, because lo timsad hakarat erech atzma karaui. A person does not, that person does not find, does not recognize or measure well his internal worth. He doesn't measure it properly. In other words, he has no idea of who he or she really is, and so he lets others define him. You are this. You are that. You are greedy. You are mediocre. You are prone to anger. You know, these things, for example, you say these to children, so they're self-fulfilling prophecies. You know, you tell a child, child's average, and most children are, but you tell them that, they'll be average. Worse, they'll be below average, because they have nothing to strive for. But you encourage them to in their accomplishments, and you praise their accomplishments, so that builds their self-worth. By the way, it's a two-edged sword, because if you praise their accomplishments too much, not only do they get an unrealistic expectation of who they really are, but in fact they do not learn to recognize or appreciate failure or growth from failure, and they respond only to a single stimulus, and that is praise from others. So to raise a child who only responds to praise from others, that's dangerous, because that sets them on the path of subjugating their sense of well-being or self-worth to what others will say. Rabbi Chaid always used to say that one of the worst things a parent can do is put up a child like 2-3 years old as a circus act to perform for each group of relatives that come in to sing a song, whatever it is, on a constant basis, because then the child associates acclaim with applause of other people, or associates accomplishment with what other people are with other people's approval. And that's very dangerous, because as you get into the world, you find that other people will applaud you for activities that are not necessarily wholesome. Entertaining, yes, but not necessarily wholesome. So to become addicted to applause at an early age, it could be harmful to a child. Better than that, of course, but it produces this halushas hanefesh that Rav Kook is speaking about, this weakness in which one's erech atzmi, self-worth, is dependent on what others are saying. And that's going to be very, very dangerous to a child, as it's dangerous to an adult. Yes, ma'am.
That's a question. I hope I could have missed something that way.
I'm sure you did, but ask anyway.
Okay. We talked about Ayin Hara and the fact that Yosef was almost above Ayin Hara. I think in today's world, when we think of Ayin Hara, we think of jealousy.
Oh, we'll get back to that. It's a Rav Dessler. We'll get to that in a few moments. It's not...
In the Torah, this is the story that could be considered
right.
Jealousy.
Okay. It's not unrelated. But it's a little different shot. I think it is related, but it's a separate track. We'll get to that in a few moments. Just take Rav Kook for what he's saying directly. A person who can't find erech atzmi in the good, in his own achievements. I can give you a good example, that to learn Torah is good, all right? But would you want a situation where a child only learns Torah where the parent knows about it? No. Will the child only davens where the parent knows about it? Of course not. You want the child to recognize the good for what it is and do the good because it's good. The daven when the parent is not looking, and tikkush when the parent is not looking. I mean, unfortunately, not to talk out of turn, but not the high schools are not necessarily very effective today in conveying this idea. So therefore, we do have, even in our community, certain cases where children stray not because they're bad kids, but because they're testing the limits. And the idea that if they went into a treif diner, even ordered a treif lunch for that matter, and no one is looking, and the school can't admonish them, and the parents don't know about it, so therefore they've done nothing wrong, well, that's extremely deleterious to a child's spiritual growth. That's, I think, to me at least, I think that school should get more involved in. One of the things I've emphasized over the years in a variety of settings is I think schools spend a little too much time talking about halacha, you know, do this, do that, and not enough time with the foundation of halacha. why it is we're doing this or that, and as what type of person, what type of Jew is going to be created because I don't eat, a tray fish. If the schools don't do that, then we just reinforce a notion, just like the parent will speed while driving, and nothing, it's innocuous as long as he's not caught by a police officer. So too, as long as I'm not caught by an authority figure, I really have done nothing wrong. God's a little above them. The authority figures are parents and teachers. That's very harmful. So if we make our sense of Erech Atzmi dependent on what others are saying, then no good will come from that. No good at all. If the cattle, or another way he puts it, if the catalyst for everything is Mabat Ha'ayin HaChitzoni, the perspective of the external eye, meaning the one who's always looking. That's the teacher who always say that she has an eye in the back of her head, right? Well, if the teacher needs, if the student needs, as at a young age they probably do, the fear that the teacher has a third eye, that's Mabat Ha'ayin HaChitzoni, it'll work for a time. But when they realize it's not true, if it's not true, it might still be true, I don't know, but if it's not true, then they won't worry about it anymore. And they will associate wrongdoing with not getting caught. And that, of course, is completely destructive of any spiritual impulse that a person will have. And I tell you with some trepidation that that is not as uncommon in our world, whether the general world or the Jewish world, as we would like to think. Wrongdoing is only wrong if you're caught. If you're not caught, it's not wrong. The Ribbono Shel Olam, he could take care of himself. That's a personal relationship I have with him. We have an understanding. I'm allowed to do certain things. But, yeah. I have an eye in back of my head. That's my sword. So that's very dangerous. The catalyst should never be Mabata Ayin Achitzoni. And I see for Yosef, it was not that. Neither his brothers, to his immediate detriment, and not Potiphar and the society of the Mitzrim, or the wife, Potiphar's wife, or Beis Paro, or anything. What Yosef was the same spiritual individual when he was the slave in Potiphar's house, when he was the prisoner in the dungeon, when he was the master and viceroy in Paro's palace. If you think about it for a moment, those are three very different situations in which a person can find himself. And to be the same spiritual personality in those circumstances is tremendous gadlus hanefesh. And that's what Yaakov noticed in Yosef, ben parat Yosef, ben parat alei oyin, and that's what Yaakov conveyed to Yosef's children as well. That was the Birchas Yaakov. The Yidgu Larov Bekerav Oretz. They should multiply like fish. In other words, Gemara says, Ma Dogim Shebeyom, Mai Mechasim Aleihem. The fish in the sea, the water covers them. What does that mean? We could think very negative thoughts about fish. We can get into a very bitter feud with fish. But when we walk by the shore, they don't have bad vibes, knowing that we're out there, because the sea covers them. They're unaware, they're oblivious to our existence. They may have bad vibes about other fish, certainly predator fish, but not human beings. Ma dagim shebiyam mai mechasim alehen, ve'ena ayin shaletes bohem, av zar shel Yosef. The Zera Yosef were the exact same way. They're not subject to the Ayin Hara because they're not in that world. We're always looking to see how people feel about them and measuring their relationship and whether liked or not liked. I mean, adults do this. They don't do it as dramatically or openly as children do it, that make lists. Who's my friend today? My best friend? Who's not my friend? Who's my enemy? Children make a list. Adults make a mental list. So, but it does exist. But to have a person's self-worth, or emotional state for that matter, be dependent on another, so that is painful. We have the ability to be mitgaber, to triumph, to rise above that, and not to make it based on that at all. So what Yaakov said is they should be like fish. That ain't ayin hara shaletas bahem, but be like fish bekerav haaretz. It's easy to have that mentality when you're living in the sea. If you're in a tower, if you're in the forest and nobody's around, if you have to live with people who are going to criticize you, who are going to look askance at you, are going to either put you in their social circle or banish you from their social circle, depending on traits that, in real terms, are not that important, but are very superficial. So to live as a fish, b'kerav haaretz, that's very difficult. That was Rabbi Yochanan, that was Yosef HaTzadik, and that was Yosef's children. That's what Rav Kook said. But the thing is, you can do that, and very easily, if you just say, I don't care what people think, right? That's not what I'm saying here. Because again, to care what people think can be valuable if a person veers off the right derech. That's not what he's saying. He's saying that we could be like fish, be careful aretz, but to still feel connected to people. See, if you feel disconnected from people, you have no inclination to chesed. Someone's suffering won't affect you. Someone's pain won't, or anguish won't affect you. That's not good. That's terrible. But to be a fish, to on a psychological level, on a spiritual level, to be able to buck the tide and say, I don't have to do that. I don't have to be the herd. I don't have to follow the trends because Oprah said to wear that. I'll be myself. But on a level of chesed, to still feel connected to another human being, that's a very powerful trait. Maybe the best way to say it is to be connected, but not to be dependent. That is very doable. Of course, it takes work. It's doable for Yosef HaTzadik and his descendants. But we all have the ability to say, Ana mizar de Yosef Klatina. I'm a descendant of Yosef. In that respect, I want to be a descendant of Yosef. To feel connected to another, but not dependent on them. To be dependent, then everything I do becomes subject to their approval, and then I cease being an autonomous entity. But to be completely autonomous has to be disconnected. That makes one merciless and cold, and that's not the approach of Yosef either. That's Rav Kook. I just want to share for a moment what Rav Dessler said here, which is along the lines of what Sippy raised. So the fourth chalik of Michtam Elio, it's in the third chalik as well in the greater form, but he says the ayin hara is jealousy. Is kino. Jealousy. People look at you in a way that's jealousy. What's interesting about it, though, is granted we're told not to exercise the ayin hara, but we're also told not to provoke the ayin hara. So he asks the question, why do you blame the person? The person lives his life. Why is it his problem if people are jealous of him? People looking at him? Why? And you know, this carries, it has a halachic dimension as well. For example, you wouldn't call a father and a son for consecutive aliyahs, or two brothers for consecutive aliyahs. Why? What's ayin hara? Because people say, oh, look at this family. They take every kibbutz for themselves. It provokes jealousy in other people. No, why don't we just say, let people work on the midos? Why is it my problem? Give them consecutive aliyahs. Rav Dessler said that we have to live in such a way that we don't provoke jealousy. And he says it in a way which is very reminiscent of his famous essay in the first chelek about chesed. He said the world's divided between takers and givers. He said, always be a giver and not a taker. The giver is the ultimate bal chesed, the ultimate lover as well. That's where he says the famous comment that the word ahava, the root is hav, meaning to give. To love someone is to be the ultimate giver and not a taker from that person. So Rav Dessler says, in our world, it's the takers who cause jealousy. Givers never cause jealousy. A person who's a giver, a nosei, never causes jealousy in other human beings. He gives. No one ever says, I despise that person. He gives so much money that's stuck up. I never heard such a thing. They could despise for other reasons. that he gets stuck or not. If they're motivated to give like he, that's a good type of jealousy. Be motivated to learn Torah like someone is learning, that's also a kinesar from Tar B'Chochma. That's a good thing. But it's the takers who evoke jealousy, because they take, and others want to emulate them, and they become envious of what they have. So Rav Dessa said, a dog, a fish, is both hidden, it's mechusim bayom, and it's also in its own world. What's the own world of a fish? Certainly vis-a-vis our world, it's a world where there's no competition with others. As v'yidgul arov v'kerev ha'aretz, the fish are in the sea. The fish do not have the inclination to compete with people who are ba'aretz on dry land. Why? Because they can't live there. Now, I reference in my own mind the comment of the Ibn Ezra on Lo Sachmot, that a person should look at Lo Sachmot not to covet something that someone else has, like the poor villager does not covet the princess. He has no aspirations to marry the princess. It's just that world is removed from him. So the Ibn Ezra says, that's Lo Sachmot. Something belongs to someone else. That's removed from me. Well, if you take it out of the realm of property and into the realm of the personal, it's a similar idea here. The fish is removed from the world of competition with men. They're in a wholly different environment entirely. They're on dry land. People are on dry land. They're in the sea. Since they're in the sea, ain ayin hara shaletus b'hem. No concept of jealousy, of competition, of striving with others who are in a completely different environment at all. That's the Milo. Rav Dessler wrote, and I quote, Chazal ratzim lamed lanu bazeh, Chazal trying to teach us, Shemi shechai samui min ha'ayin, a person who lives under the radar. It isn't quoted here, maybe in the third chalek, but Chazal say in Gemara, in a number of places, Ein ha-bracha mitzuya ela bedavar ha-samui min ha-ayin. Blessing is extant only in something that's hidden from the eye. Hidden from the eye. But now you understand what he's talking about. If Chazal wanted to teach us that the ideal for a Jew is to live under the radar, so people don't notice everything that we're doing, ushifosam heim legamrei acheros min harachov, and our yearnings are completely different than what people on the street yearn for. If our yearnings are completely acherot legamrei min harachov, what the oy poloi want, what they desire, what they yearn for, what they earn their money to buy, then einom orer kina la'olam. Such a person will never arouse jealousy at all. When do people arouse jealousy? If they live in a way which is not samui min ha'ayin, which is not under the radar, but dafka, extravagant, they call attention to themselves, so that evokes jealousy. Or if they live in such a way that they have the same aspirations, material aspirations, as the rechov, as the street, well, in the street there's a lot of jealousy. The whole country's based on it. If you live in such a way that our values and aspirations are borrowed from the street, or those aspirations infiltrate our homes, so again, there'll be tremendous hisoris of kinah, because that's on what the world is based. But if it's not, if in terms of the way we lead material lives, it's samui min ha'ayin, it's hidden from others. And I understand the Gemara, why is bracha mitzuya in some of samui min ha'ayin? Because blessing that is in a person's face, whether it's neighbors or community, it's not enjoyed as much because people resent it. So you could have it. It doesn't say the bracha is missing or deficient or removed from the person. It's not mitsuya. It's hard for it to remain extant because it makes you uncomfortable, right? It's like a person living in a community where everybody is starving and he's eating 5-course meals every night. So it's not samui min ha'ayin. It's something which will just arouse resentment on the part of others and bring about situations of strife. So Rav Dessler said that two ways, therefore, of avoiding that ayin hara. One is avoiding kinah in others, situations of kinah. Situations where we live lives that just are bound necessarily to evoke that type of jealousy in others, and also to develop the spiritual gravitas to influence others. Now, what I said before, that Rav Kook and Rav Dessler, they're different personalities to be sure, and they're not saying the same thing here, but in fact what they are saying do correlate on that level. On the one hand, if we lead lives of moderation and simplicity, some women ha'ayin, then it won't provoke the ayin hara. It won't provoke that jealousy in other people. It's a life in which a person is content and a person does not seek the approval of others, right? I think I mentioned once, I run afoul of this more often than I probably should. You know, I go to someone's house, and his new house, and they'll say, come, I wanted to show you my house. And a few times I said, no, I'm not really interested. Not because I'm jealous or not jealous. Thank God I'm not a very jealous person to begin with. I didn't have much interest in it. That's all. I can't go to house see a person. I'll talk to the people interest me more than, you know, the furniture. But that's just me. But if you live in such a way that you want to, you know, buy a table or a car or a dining room set, and you're desperate that people, or even want people, look at my furniture, that's only going to arouse kinah, because you're tapping into, first, something you took, something you have, to possession, and you're tapping into a dimension of life which is almost designed to arouse kinah. But what it's saying about you, the enjoyment that you have is not exclusively in the possession of the object, which should properly bring enjoyment, but in how others perceive it. And that's where, again, we conflate Rav Kook and Rav Dessler. If what you have is more enjoyable because Yenim doesn't have it, so that's a problem. Because then Yenim will have something else that you don't have, and you won't be able to live without that.
But there are some people who are always jealous of anything. I said I'm somebody else, another woman. I said, isn't she beautiful? And the one I said it to said, yeah, she works at it. she couldn't take
right.
So there are some people that
I think that's more normal than abnormal. All
right. Really? To say that?
Unfortunately, the world as I see it, you'll tell me if I'm wrong, contains more people who are jealous preternaturally than people who are not jealous preternaturally.
If somebody is honored at a dinner.
Right. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants to be honored at dinner.
You know why? He's got plenty of money because he steals.
Right. I can tell no one ever wants to go out to dinner. In fact, I always tell people I get involved in this. No cover is meant by it at all. Right. And no one takes it as a cover. I remember I was once at a dinner, and they honored a Rav who told the hosts he could not be there that night. He had a wedding. Nonetheless, they honored him anyway.
What's that? I mean, the people,
that's perfect, right.
The people
right.
Who are seeing the honoree. Some of them, he gave a lot of money, he stole it. I can't believe for a moment anyone is jealous of an honoree at a dinner.
What's that?
There's always somebody who's
yes. Avak Loshon Hara, that's correct. That's Avak Loshon Hara.
You have to know he's saying it.
Right. You have to know he's saying it to.
Don't say it in front of someone else.
If you're saying it to someone whose reaction you either don't know, well, for sure you know will be negative, then you can't say it. That's Avak Loshon Hara. That's right. There are two methods, really, of avoiding the Ayin Hara. One is through, like Rav Dessler, avoiding situations of kinah. And the second thing is to develop a spiritual strength, an inner strength, to influence others and not be influenced by others. And when I say that, again, I don't mean to be disconnected, but not be dependent on others for one's internal worth. And if you do that, then, in fact, that will happen. You will not be influenced by others, but you will represent a different sort of reality that people say, hey, he doesn't seem to care.
She's
you know,
queer.
Doesn't, what's that?
She's queer.
I don't know if you can say it anymore today, but no, I'm talking something else. You know, So, you know, this guy, he doesn't talk Lashon Hara, or she doesn't talk in shul. I'll be like them. Or the person's not going to be influenced by others. I don't do it, right? And then others will say, you know what? She's right. He's right. We could be like that also if only we wanted. That really is the legacy of Yosef. Why? Because Yosef is the classic symbol of the Jew who's alone in exile and has to make his own way against very powerful forces. And yet, he's not just the Jew who's in exile, but he's emblematic of the Jew who survives the Golus. We can't survive the Golus unless we have the mentality of Yosef. Otherwise, the world will just inundate us with its pressures and its values and its conflicting ideas of even what the good is in society. Ano mizara de Yosef kasino. What Rabbi Yochanan said is not just for him. We're told, and this is the bracha of Yaakov to his grandsons, who were, by the way, the first Jewish grandsons to grandchildren to be born in exile in Mitzrayim. Be Zera Yosef. Don't be influenced from the outside. Of course, we assimilate the positive influences such as they are, but don't be influenced. Don't make your values dependent on theirs, and certainly don't govern your sense of right and wrong based on the approval of what others in the society have to say. Because invariably, they'll be wrong, their influences will be corrosive, and they'll be destructive of all our spiritual influences. But rather, be Mizara de Yosef. And that's, I think, the lesson that he's taught every single Jew, not just his biological descendants, but in fact every Jew who aspires to be a Ben Yosef. Okay, I thank you all.